Hello and welcome to this special episode of The Only Way Is Reading, a podcast brought to you by Essex Library Services. Today we are talking all things poetry to celebrate National Poetry Day. I spoke to Anthony Roberts from Colchester Arts Centre, who has been using poetry to keep the culture alive by performing a poem, among other things. And then Freya and I will be chatting about our relationship with poetry. So firstly, how are you, Freya?
I'm good. I'm excited to be back and recording. It's felt really weird not sitting down every week to talk books with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great that we can come back together and like do these sort of cool one-off episodes. And I think this is a really nice way as well to celebrate National Poetry Day by talking to various people. And obviously I've spoken to Anthony. So he's been using poetry to help himself and others get through lockdown. I'm joined by Anthony Roberts from Colchester Arts Centre. Anthony, thank you so much for joining me on this National Poetry Day episode of our podcast. How are you?
It's a great pleasure. I'm very well, thank you, Beth. I'm very well.
Excellent. So I know that the Colchester Arts Centre is obviously very different at the moment, but I have been watching you keeping the culture alive with your daily poetry videos.
Relentless.
So would you like to tell us a little bit more about the videos and sort of why you decided to start them?
Yeah, well, it seems a long time ago now when the whole thing kicked off, the lockdown came. It was a Monday night. We, for the Arts Centre, it was a folk club on. And then Boris made his announcement, I think, about theatres at about 6 o'clock. And that was it. It was shut, doors were shut. No audience, and been working at the Arts Centre for a long time, Beth, about 20 years. So putting on 300 shows a year, all of a sudden, nothing. But what's been interesting in amongst the whole kind of shebang is that for the arts and artists, sometimes it's interesting to have a different challenge. And if you put boundaries and rules around the challenge, then sometimes that provokes an interesting and more creative response. So very quickly, the idea of how do we talk to people when the venue's shut? What's an art centre do? Are we going to survive? What's the money? All this kind of stuff. But how do we continue a conversation with people if we don't have the key thing? If you take away the key thing of live performance, which is the venue, well, what was that? What are you left with? And so we started very simply with some poems, and we found that we were talking to people that perhaps we wouldn't have talked to if we were open anyway. People who wouldn't maybe necessarily come to the Arts Centre because they were isolated, they were lonely, maybe they had mobility issues, maybe they were, for whatever reason that they, chose not, which is perfectly fine, goodness knows, not everybody wants to come into a busy venue, into town. And we found that the poetry that we started broadcasting got traction almost immediately, and conversations started off. And we also offered, alongside me reading a poem every day that's broadcast every day on the Arts Centre's website and the Arts Centre's social media, etc. But we offered this kind of like dial a poem, you call us and we'll, ring you up and have a poem. Because in those early days, people did feel scared. And although people were reluctant themselves, we felt, to phone up and say, hello, it's me, I'd like a poem, please. Friends or relatives would say, my mum lives alone and, we're cheering her up, but it'd be nice if you could read her a poem. So I would call up, and the poem was just a kind of conversation starter, if you like. It was a beautiful way to just to have that human contact, because after, say, read the poem, love could be whatever poem that they'd chosen or something that we'd suggested or, we found that was the kind of starting point for, they would tell you about why they'd chosen that poem or where it was or what it meant to them and what they'd learned at school or something like that. And people encounter poetry at weddings, at funerals, at times of significant moments when And so it reconnected me, and it made me think, you know, well, what is it that's special about poetry? And I mean, Jackie Kay says this very beautifully at the start of her Desert Island Discs, if anyone wants to listen to that. But it's a way of saying things that normal language doesn't really touch. It's about way of expressing, maybe it's emotion or feeling, or using the language differently, breaking up those rules and touching you in a different way. Because if you could say it, you know, you'd just say it. You know, if you could just say, well, I've been struggling with my mental health, I've been feeling depressed because X, Y, and Z, then, you know, go ahead and say that. But this is a way of talking about all sorts of ways of the human condition, you know, joy, seasons, nature, loneliness, any different kind of like way that you want, your sense of self, yourself. Poetry covers a whole lot. The only rules about poetry is there are no rules. And so it's a very nice, interesting way for me to rediscover and to reconnect with the huge canon of poems and people and stuff that's out there. That's along with some other stuff we've been doing, but the what's been really uplifting and interesting for us is this poetry project.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, and it's been such a pleasure as well to be able to hear such beautiful poetry being performed, because I think, like you said as well, it really calms the spirit in a way, and I think that's something that people really need at the moment. I think you touched on a really important point, that poetry can kind of describe an emotion in a way that words may not necessarily be able to, and it's a way to kind of tap into those emotions almost subconsciously without actually having to head on face them, which can be a bit daunting for a lot of people. So I think poetry is a really good segue into that.
I think so. And you know, I mean, when often people say, well, I don't understand, you know, I don't like it, I don't understand it. It's almost as if they're kind of intimidated, and but you don't really get that, you know, when a poem's read at a wedding. Maybe because it's a context, you know, the context is we're all having a lovely time, we're celebrating these two people. But they don't really say, because you're not, it's not always about understanding it, to rewrite it in literal prose isn't really the point. It's to kind of like not to feel it or to, and it's totally fine. Some of my favourite poetry, I don't know why I like it. You know, I wouldn't really be able to say, you know, I'm not in a situation where I have to deconstruct it for an exam, or, you know, I'm not being judged. And it touches me and moves me in ways that you can't necessarily nail down. And that's really some of the beauty of it. One of the dense poems that I read fairly earlier on this series was Kubla Khan by Samuel Coleridge, which he wrote after he woke, I read, after an opium-induced dream. Because I was thinking, where the hell has he got that from? And I already woke up after an opium-induced dream. Gave a little bit of context. But I said to our child, Reggie, you know, I'm going to do, because he's been filming more, you know. So he said, I was going to do this one today. And he said, oh, I know that one, because it's from this cartoon. And he showed me the cartoon. It was a series called Witch that he'd been watching. And they reference this poem, and then so the poem, although fantastical and dense, because it's about the poetic muse itself, I think, at some level, that poem, in Xanadu, in Kubla Khan, a sacred, you know, off it goes. It was relevant to him as a 12-year-old child. So, you know, and that's the densest, most kind of complex, most fraught, I thought, profound of the whole, you know, because some are frivolous, some are fun, some are jolly, some are kind of like touching, etc., etc. But of all those, the 12-year-old is one, oh yeah, I know that one.
I think one of the favourite ones that I saw you reading, I think it was called The Paradoxical Commandments.
Oh yeah, that's quite recent. Yeah, that was
yeah, very good. I think that was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. I thought it was really funny, and it really kept making me laugh. But the actual message, it was such a lovely message, and it was a real pleasure to kind of watch that and kind of see it being performed.
Yeah.
So
that was a good one. Yeah, I like that one.
So this is such a massively broad question, but kind of what is it that you love the most about poetry?
I think it's that it's like art, you know, like what is it that art does? There is no utilitarian purpose for it at all. There's a poem I did called The Unemployable Poem. And it was like, what's this poem for? What does it do? Well, it doesn't do, you know, it can't do that. It can't do this. You know, it hasn't got a job. You know, you can't, there's no job that I can give it. There's no practical application to a poem, to a painting, to a piece of music. But that is the beauty of it. It is the pure aestheticism of it and the human condition that allows us to enter into that kind of world that has aspiration and ideas beyond the material. That's got all gone a bit profound. Sorry, Beth, you know.
It's talk about poetry, it's bound to go slightly profound, because I think that's the essence of poetry, isn't it? That it kind of takes you out of that sense of kind of solidity in a way. So you kind of feel like there's this extra, almost like a whole new range of emotions that you weren't really aware of, but they're captured in this poetry. I think one of the things that I love about poetry as well is kind of the absolute raw kind of subjectiveness of it, that me and you could literally read the exact same poem and take away something completely polar opposite from each other. Yeah. You know, quite a lot when you've been speaking about the poetry now, it's, you know, you've sort of started sentences with, well, how, you know, the way I read it or how I see it. So it's kind of that, it's so that every single poem is so personal to each individual person, and kind of depending on the experiences they've had in their life or sort of what stage they're at or even just what mood they're in that day, that poem is speaking differently to each person. And I think that's a really amazing thing.
Quite so. And I think the same can be said of, you know, different art forms, paintings and songs. And I had quite a few people suggesting poems, or quite a few people suggesting the lyrics of songs, but I've resisted doing the lyrics of songs because it's different. And I have quite enjoyed the purity of poetry, if you like, you know, where you just distill the words, you just have the words. And they either on the page, because we send them out, you know, in an email, or, you know, spoken to you. And it's interesting that some poems work well spoken, and some you can feel that they're better read. They work better on the page for people to read them rather than hear them. But some have, you know, a music or a rhythm, and they kind of like, you know. So, because when I approach a reading of them, the way I rehearse them is that I need to find something that I connect with. And quite often it can be a random, you know, not particularly connected with the text itself, like the age of the poet when they wrote it. Somehow for me, enables me to unlock something. Not always, but, you know, something. But it might be a phrase or an emotion or a gag that's in there. But it has to, I just need to find one or two things I can, like, you know, feel that I'm me and the author have got a connection, and then I'm good to go. So and I like that. And if it's a song, then you hear the melody, and that's not the same as a poem. Poems and songs are different.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, whatever you're doing, it's working, because they are such a pleasure to watch. So do you kind of have a favourite poet that you almost graduate towards?
No, I wouldn't say that I have a particular poet. That's an interesting question. I haven't really thought about that, really. I have ones that I prefer over others. But I think one of the things for me doing it, because I've done nearly 200 poems now, is that I like the variety of the different kind of voices that there are in poetry. And so, you know, I have chosen some from anthologies that we've got, but, you know, you have an anthology, they're all by, you know, you've got 80 poems, 100 poems by the same author. And after a while, you get a bit kind of like to hear a different voice and a different kind of, I like all sorts of different ones. You know, Maya Angelou, I like for the campaigning, you know, there's a poem, well, Still I Rise, which is a very powerful poem. And, you know, I did that one at the time of the Black Lives Matters movement, which happened coincidentally at the same time as this poetry project. And that was a, you know, really strong connection. And I felt those kind of things. But I like Coleridge as well. I like the density and the obscurity of that. Well, should we have a poem? There's one by a guy called Michael Rosen, which I can read.
I love Michael Rosen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. So this poem was particularly relevant to the COVID and the lockdown, if you like, because it was written in as a celebration of the 60 years of the NHS. So it has a kind of particular poignancy now. Anyway, it's called These Are the Hands, and this is how it reads. These are the hands that touch us first, feel your head, find the pulse, make your bed. These are the hands that tap your back, test the skin, hold your arm, wheel the bin, change the bulb, fix the drip, pour the jug, replace your hip. These are the hands that fill the bath, mop the floor, flick the switch, soothe the sore, burn the swabs, give us a jab, throw out the sharps, design the lab. These are the hands that stop the leaks, empty the pan, wipe the pipes, carry the can, clamp the veins, make the cast, log the dose, and touch us last. A mixing up of the practical, you know, the kind of like the mopping the floors, changing the bulbs, and the bigger things, the kind of duty of care, the kind of tenderness, and the, you know, the love that's that runs throughout the poem as well. And so it's a kind of like a praise and a kind of like a love letter to that particular institution, if you can write a love letter to an institution as well. So that was quite that was one that I enjoyed reading.
It is lovely. And I think it's nice that this new art is being brought forward based on this situation. And it was like you were saying in the beginning that, you know, artists have adapted to the situation and are producing new content. And I think that's something that's really interesting. And again, this is, you know, say in 10 years time, people can read that poem again, and it's that kind of bookmarking history in a way.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it, Beth. I feel the poetic muse has descended upon you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's taken me back to my university days, I think. Quite. So were there any other poems that you wanted to share with us at all today?
Yeah, I've got a couple for you. This one is by a poet called Luke Wright, who is, is originally from Colchester, and tells the story with great glee about how he was thrown out of the art centre as a 17-year-old kid. I don't remember that myself, but he's been back to the art centre many times since as a published poet. This is one called Prayer, and it's a reflection on growing up, on parenting, on being a parent, on being a child, and how that works as we grow older. It's called Prayer. It's by Luke Wright. This is how it reads. In concrete 1980s parks, my mother found a place to watch. I need to keep an eye on you, she'd say. And so she'd sit and swing her keys or turn a True Life paperback. As I fell through an inky pool of time to lose myself, her eye on me, a length of twine around my toe to pull me back for air. But I grew up as we grow up and scorned her eye and burned the twine, dived, drugged and drunk in dirty pools of base. I wasn't lost. I had myself and lungs the size of concert halls. I had it all. A stomach full of life, all these eyes on me, an easy job, a wife. I finished, miss, a smug glance at the clock. I gazed down at my navel, as it were the world. I had myself, I had myself. So, nothing much, as it turns out. A twang of id, a shallow scrape of man. It's just these days I take my own sons to the park like nothing's wrong. I watch them play and I say, I'll keep an eye on you. And there are times I cannot breathe to know they only have my eye on them. This eye that darts around, this brittle twine, that when I sit on empty nights and hold my knees to watch them sleep or see myself reflected in a screened call, in debts that grow like pygmy weed, in callow words I barely mean, and sense there might be something ugly deep down in my soul, I long to feel an eye on me, a length of twine around my toe again. So can you, will you keep an eye on me? And should I need it, pull me up for air?
Wow.
That's jolly, isn't it?
No, but that was amazing. That got me a bit emotional.
Yeah, it's kind of like, is that guy's journey, isn't it? You know, a poem like that is kind of gives you an insight into the kind of like some of the demons and the battles and the things that you face. When you look at your own kids, you think about your own parents in a different way. And I think that's, you know, he burnt this twine and now he wants it back again.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a such beautiful motion, and it was this full kind of circle and a journey through his life and the ups and the downs. And yeah, the journey, I think, was really beautiful in that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Do you want to end with a love poem?
Oh, always.
Oh, have to end with a love poem, don't we? You know.
Absolutely.
So this is one that you're familiar with, I know, because you told me that your granddad used to read you this. I would just explain that I've been growing a beard in lockdown. I announced the first day that I wouldn't be shaving again until the Arts Centre reopened. And during the course of this time, it was a very spontaneous and frivolous thing, but I found I looked a little bit like Uncle Albert from Only Fools and Horses. Very disturbing, really. Anyway, you said your granddad used to read this, and since I've grown this beard, when I'm out with my 13-year-old son, as he now is, then I'm frequently mistaken for his granddad. So, anyway,
you don't look like your granddad, if that helps.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. But anyway, let's do this love poem. Here's a lovely love poem by Edward Lear. And it's written in 1871. It's very famous, so I'm sure most of you will at least know the opening lines, if not the full poem. This is how it reads. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a £5 note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy. Oh, pussy, my love. What a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy said to the owl, you elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married. Too long we have tarried, but what shall we do for a ring? They sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood, a piggywig stood with a ring at the end of his nose. His nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the piggy, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by a turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon, and hand in hand on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. It's one of my favourites. As I was saying to you earlier, my granddad used to read that. So that brings back so many memories.
Mm. Dancing to the light of the moon. How can you not be in love?
Well, absolutely. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really look forward to watching more daily poems of yours.
Thank you very much. Well,
that That was great. I've lived in Colchester pretty much my whole life, and Anthony and the Arts Centre have been such a cultural epicentre for the whole area as long as I've been around. So it's actually really amazing that we got him on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. He's such an amazing guy, and completely awesome at reading poetry. Like, you just get completely enveloped just by his voice and his kind of production of it. It's amazing. So I definitely recommend watching a lot of his videos. I think they've got the whole backlog on their website, which is cool.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, Freya, the same thing that I asked Anthony.
Okay.
So what do you love most about poetry?
Oh, that's really tricky because I have quite a lot of, I'm a bit of a poetry fanatic, really do prefer it over a lot of other types of literature, but I would have to say my favourite thing is that it's not contained in any like stylistic forms. I really like how you can express the same emotion in 100 different ways, and similarly you can express so many different things in so few words. And I also really like how the structure of a poem plays into the atmosphere that it creates. I think it's just really interesting how much freedom you have. And I honestly would love to be a published poet. I think it would be amazing to know that your words have affected somebody in some way, which is an amazing segue into what I'm about to, not force you, but force you to talk about, because you're a published poet, aren't you, Beth?
Oh, God. I guess, so it's not published poet as in I have tomes and anthologies with my name on. So basically, when I was at university, I was studying creative and professional writing. So poetry was quite a big section of that. And one of my lecturers was a completely amazing poet called Tim Atkins, was completely stunning. And I just always wanted to be able to write this poem that he would love. Turns out I'm actually slightly better at short stories than I am at poems, but I still gave it a whirl. And the university was running a competition, so we could send in a poem based on a theme, and then the winner would be published in a local organisation's, they had like a mini anthology. They used quite a lot of works from local artists and students. So I entered this poem as I was probably having a drink and I thought, this is a genius idea.
on a whim, I will
exactly.
be the next Tolkien. First poets,
exactly.
Then novels.
Yeah, so I entered the poem and I actually ended up winning. So my poem then got published in the anthology, which was really exciting, really cool to kind of see my name actually in an official bound book rather than just a printed and stapled piece of paper.
So, I mean, I think it's really impressive. I had a friend who, I think in primary school, got a poem published, and she was very happy to kind of see Poppy, you know, at the bottom of a poem in a real life book. Do you still have the book? Have you kept it? Do you read it every night?
I do still have it. It's actually on the shelf next to where I'm sitting at the moment. Yeah, I don't particularly read it all the time. Every now and again I look back and I go, oh look, at least, you know, that's been published.
So will you maybe gift us with a small reading?
Oh God, how did I know you were going to ask me that? Okay, that's fine. I just want you to know that I wrote this, you know, quite a few years ago. I think the theme was, it was about loss, but I didn't want it to be like a very depressing poem, so I tried to do something that was a little bit unusual. Ugh, I'm just gonna have to do it. Okay.
Just do it.
So it's called Lost Soul by me, Beth, and it goes like this. My spider friend died today. His legs curled around his body and he fell from his silken web. I sat and watched, unable to help my last companion. I had a brother once, twins but not identical, practically opposites. He was always right, and then he left. And now I sit in the dark beneath the stairs, waiting for someone to find me. They looked once, almost found me too, but my spider friend scared them away. Then they stopped looking. I used to try and call out, but no one heard my squeaks. Now I lie here, unable to move, or jump, or dance. Unwanted, for who could want one left shoe?
Oh, I really, really liked that. I was slightly worried because I really should have got you to send it to me beforehand, but I wanted a raw reaction and I was worried it was going to be bad and I was going to have to go, oh, that was, yeah. But no, I thought that was really good. I really liked that. I loved the symbolism of the left and the right and the twin. And, oh, yeah, really good. Well done you.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do something that was a bit weird. And they emailed me and they said, you know, we're really happy that, you know, to let you know that you've won. It was publication in their book more than anything, really. Yeah, and they were saying the whole way through, you're thinking it's a person, but actually this is what your shoe is saying to you. So everyone that's listening, next time you can't find one of your shoes, keep looking because it might be waiting to be found.
Don't, honestly, giving human emotion to inanimate objects, there's a word for that and I always forget it. It was my English teacher's favourite word. It's the one thing that always gets me whenever somebody has like a shoe or like your laptop or, I don't know, a piece of gum that you've discarded and somebody creates this really sad world around it. It always gets me quite emotional.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was actually really good fun writing it as well. And I think that's sort of what you were saying as well about poetry, is that you can't really get it wrong. You know, if it's a message, if there's something in there that's a message and it touches you in some way, even if it just makes you laugh or makes you go, what on earth is this girl talking about a shoe for?
Exactly.
You know, then it works and it's really great.
Oh, well, thank you for that. What a lovely way to wrap up the episode.
Thank you. I mean, it was very stressful for me, but I'm glad that you enjoyed the whole process. So I hope that you have all enjoyed our National Poetry Day episode. Obviously, we would love to hear what you love about poetry, any kind of favourite poets or poems that you would like to recommend, or any topics that you would like us to cover in future episodes of our podcast.
You can contact us on Twitter or Facebook at Essex Libraries, or send us an email to reading@essex.gov.uk. This has been Beth
and Freya
on The Only Way Is Reading. Thanks for listening.
Bye.